support comes from Tub Cove. With over 49 years of remodeling bathrooms, Tub Cove can help simplify the process, offering tub and shower replacements and full bathroom remodels. Local and family-owned, with a showroom in Redmond. Designs and information at tubcove.com.
Hey, good morning. It's Paige Browning. It's Thursday. This is Seattle Now. City planners want Seattle to become a 15-minute city where you can walk to everything you need in your neighborhood. Well, now there's a new interactive map that can tell you just how walkable your neighborhood is and will take you to a walkable slice of Seattle that might surprise you. But first, let's get you caught up. Boeing's decision to move its headquarters away from Seattle back in 2001 was one factor that led to the safety crisis at the company today. That is according to expert testimony during Senate hearings on Boeing this week. In a statement, Boeing said it's taking feedback from the panel to heart. Senators plan to call Boeing in to testify in upcoming hearings. King County has announced it's awarding $2 million in grants to help alleviate the refugee housing crisis in Tukwila. For months, hundreds of people have been living outdoors in a tent encampment on a church's property. Others have been temporarily housed in hotels. The money will go to nonprofits who are giving legal and housing help. And a University of Washington football player is due in court this morning for allegedly raping two women last fall. Tylan Tybo Rogers is an 18-year-old running back with UW. His attorney says he's innocent. He's been suspended from team activities until further notice. That's it for now. Come back tonight for evening headlines. How would you like to live a 15-minute walk from all the things you need? Places like the grocery store, a park, bus or light rail stops. That's the idea behind the 15-minute city movement, and most of Seattle doesn't qualify right now. But the city's making it a priority in its new comprehensive growth plan. Walkability is a big priority for Seattleite Nat Henry.
I was thinking about places to move, and I live in Capitol Hill and wanted to find another place where I could walk to all the things that mattered most to me.
Nat happens to be a geographer and a data guy, so he decided to build himself a tool to see at a glance how walkable different parts of the city are.
I posted the original map online, and it was just for the city of Seattle, but it got so many positive responses where people messaged me and said, I would love to use this to buy my next house. I use this to help inform a city planning meeting.
Oh my gosh.
Could you please make this map for places like Portland or Boston or Minneapolis? And so I thought, you know, there might really be something there. There seems like there's this pent-up demand for walkable neighborhoods across the states, and decided to start doing this full-time.
Nat's map tool now covers the entire country. It's called Close.City. Nat told me this map is different from a walk score that you might see on an apartment listing because you can really get specific of what you'd want to walk to. Maybe you care about being close to parks but not schools, or a bus station but not a grocery store. If you check off all the amenities available, you might be surprised by what areas of Seattle light up. When we asked Nat what neighborhood we should visit to get a sense of the 15-minute city, he said Madrona.
And I got really a surprised reaction from a lot of people saying,
Madrona?
You know, Madrona, that's not walkable to anything. And so I wanted to maybe dispel some concerns and also wanted to show off this neighborhood because it's one of the areas that's featured as a possible neighborhood center in the upcoming comprehensive plan.
Okay.
And so I hope that we can look through and see what's on the verge of being a 15-minute neighborhood and what might use some work.
I met up with Nat to explore Madrona and see those amenities that make his map light up here. We started at the grocery outlet at the corner of Union and MLK and walked up the hill toward the heart of Madrona.
So here we're at Spring and 31st, and I just wanted to pause here for a second because if you were looking at the map, you might consider this intersection a bit of a sweet spot. So at the moment, we are about 5 minutes from the grocery store, walking uphill.
Right down, yep, down this hill.
And as we continue to go up, we're about one block from the elementary school, so 2 minutes depending on what entrance you go into. Huh. 3 minutes from a playground, about 5 minutes from a library, and 2 minutes north to a bus stop.
So this is the spot to live.
This does seem like a pretty sweet spot
to live.
Would
be a very good spot.
But I think the other really apparent part is that there is this huge steep hill to the east of us here.
Yes.
And so that's a consideration too. You know, if you are maybe a sort of younger walker buying your first home, maybe this is great. But, you know, can you also live in place and still continue to access all those amenities?
Okay, so we'll be looking for the school up here, right?
Yep. So we've walked one block, and here we have the elementary school.
There it is. This looks like a new building, actually.
And some other nice features that you can consider for walkability or street safety. We have the street closed, so local access only during the day, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Uh-huh.
And one block east, we have a little diversion. So actually, Spring doesn't connect from 32nd up to 34th.
So this is going to slow down traffic.
Exactly. You can still walk through, but you have to take a turn for traffic. So now we're walking across Spring Street on 34th. And you'll notice that we're going from this more residential feeling area to a street that is lively and has businesses on both sides, and where you really feel drawn in by all of the different storefronts that we're passing. That's actually an effect of the zoning code. So we've just walked into a block with different zoning that allows for this more dense commercial space. And so you can see why this sort of goes from being more of a leafy, green sort of a residential feeling neighborhood to this, you know, what some people might think of when they think of a walkable street. So we've just passed by a Cupcake Royale. We're now by the consignment shop with a beautifully hand-drawn sign saying, come on in.
They've got some good-looking stuff in there.
Yeah. It looks like are passing a tap house on the other side and also a bistro. Now we're walking by a little dense area of row cottages. And in front of us, we've got a barbershop, a real estate place, and a coffee house and bar. There's certainly an aspect of the comprehensive plan that is this sort of top-down zoning for the whole city and deciding where there will be, you know, these commercial zones. But the mayor also has some other options on his plate. Those include adding neighborhood grocery stores and little cafes. And so that's an option that's on the table in the current comp plan. And also allowing for a residential...
Small little mom-and-pop groceries.
Exactly, yeah. And so that's something where a neighborhood that might feel more out of the way or residential with a single coffee shop can totally transform the whole feel.
Yep.
I've actually gotten some comments from people saying, I live in, you know, an area that wouldn't necessarily be considered walkable by most standards, but someone just opened up one of those little corner stores next to me, and it totally changes how I interact with my neighborhood. Yeah. I see my neighbors, I say hi to them in the morning, I feel like I'm a regular somewhere, mm-hmm. and it just totally changes how I interact with my neighborhood.
As Close Dot City gets more and more viewers and users, how do you anticipate people will use it?
I hope that it can be used both on sort of an individual level for people who want to choose to live in the walkable part of their neighborhood. And I think there's all sorts of research behind this showing that shorter commutes and shorter times spent in your car every day actually translates into sort of dollars of happiness. So, you know,
feel that.
Yeah. And I felt that myself, too, moving to work from home after 2020. I really did feel like that shortening of the commute was a huge improvement in my life and something I wanted to think about. But I also hope that this will be useful on a planning or advocacy level for people who want to make sure that everyone in their community is within a 15-minute walk of a park or public health or maybe a cooling center. I think all of those things are really important. And I think this map hopefully gives us a language to, you know, have those sorts of conversations and figure out what might make a more complete community.
Mm-hmm. In making this map, you ran a lot of data. What have you learned about how walkable Seattle really is?
If we choose a list of amenities that we should say all people should be able to walk to, so maybe that includes supermarkets, parks, public transit, we can start to see that there are some differences between neighborhoods. So I don't think it would be fair to say that the entire city of Seattle is a 15-minute city at the moment.
Right.
And I think that even in this very walkable or very clustered neighborhood, there might still be some amenities that are missing. So we talked about the frequency of buses. You know, does bus service need to happen more often for people to feel connected to the rest of the city or to support some of those people who don't have the ability to walk up and downhill every week for groceries?
Yeah.
Do we need to have a supermarket that's on the same elevation as the rest of the amenities? So In some of my research, I found that about 44% of Seattleites had access to that basic package of amenities.
Okay.
And I think as you
less
start
than
looking,
half.
Less than half, yes.
For a major city.
Yes, and it's interesting because Seattle often ranks in the top 10 lists of most walkable cities. And I think that might be true on the whole. But then when you drill down to different neighborhoods, you really need to think about the inequalities and the discrepancies within the city as well.
When you posted about this on Twitter, it generated a lot of interest, and now it's been viewed like 770,000 times. Why do you think there's so much interest?
I was really pleased and overwhelmed by the level of interest that the site got in the first few days.
Okay,
and
yeah.
In fact, on my end, I'm hosting all the infrastructure myself, and so I had to be frantically hooking up computers to make sure that it could support all the web traffic that it was receiving on
that first
2 days. And I'm really pleased because the website, I just checked the metrics for the first week since it was made public, and I got 1.3 million views of the map on the website.
1.3 million?
So, yeah, more than I could have ever imagined in that first week.
Wow.
So the response has been fantastic, positive and overwhelming in a good way. And I think that it speaks to this need for a language to discuss your community, both the city but also the particular neighborhood you live in, and the ability to say, you know, I love living here because we have all the amenities available. Or if we just had this one extra amenity, you know, this could make a walkable neighborhood. And so I think it's being used as a tool for people to discuss their neighborhoods with friends, to share their neighborhoods, and to start having some conversations about what they have and what is needed.
It really gives us, you know, arms us with more tools to and more information to know what our neighborhood's missing.
Exactly.
And to know what we can appreciate. City planners have said they want Seattle to become a 15-minute city where key amenities are within 15 minutes of where you live, walk-wise. How far away is Seattle from achieving that goal?
I think it really depends on the ambition of the city planners. One of my favorite maps is a little diagram showing the Burt Gilman before it became the Burt Gilman Trail. So the Burt Gilman Trail started off as a railway line that went through UW and some parts of northern Seattle. And in the 70s, the line was shutting down, and a series of community organizations realized that they wanted this. This had the potential to become a really beautiful walkway and parkway across the entire half of the city. And so they made this diagram that showed not just the Burt Gilman, but also what is now Gasworks Park, which is previously a industrial space.
Yeah.
And then the areas that would become Discovery Park and Magnuson Park, which were military bases. And so I think that diagram showed the kind of ambition that we can have about Seattle. The desire
we've been able to do it before.
Exactly. We have been able to conceive of grand visions of how to create public space, how to create beautiful, livable neighborhoods. And if we can harness some of that same ambition, we could make Seattle a true 15-minute city in the coming 10 or 20 years.
Is it possible for it to become a true 15-minute city if single-family neighborhoods are not rezoned for more density?
At the city level, I think the answer to that question is no. Mm-hmm. You will need to have some changes in how zoning works across the city to create some of those pockets of density that allow for the amenities that people love.
Right.
And I think now is a great time to have that conversation because we have an estimated 200,000 people coming to the city in the next 20 to 30 years. And we can treat that like a crisis that is, you know, undermining the character of the neighborhood. But the fact is that the character of Seattle has been changing dramatically over time regardless. And in fact, I was looking up housing prices around Madrona in 2000 and 2010. You could buy many of these houses for about $500,000 to $700,000.
And in today, 2010.
In 2010. And today, the median house price is $1.4 million. And so it's a real
question.
It's gone
up by almost a million.
Yes, it is. It is nearly doubled.
14 years.
In many cases. Yeah. So I think there's a real question about, you know, we have access to these amenities in this neighborhood, but can we also welcome in new people who will both support the amenities and also be able to, you know, add life to the city? And so I think this this comprehensive plan and the particular moment we're in now is, you know, both a challenging moment, but a really great opportunity to revitalize a lot of these neighborhoods and to create, you know, walkable and livable and extremely pleasant communities.
Nat Henry is a geographer here in Seattle and the founder of the new map, Close.City. Nat, thanks for talking and walking with us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Seattle Now. And extra thank you to the listeners who donate to support this show. Today's episode was produced by Andy Hurst. It was edited by Caroline Chamberlain Gomez. Our production team also includes Claire McGrain, Vaughn Jones, and Patricia Murphy. Greg Kramer does our theme music. Seattle Now and KUOW Public Radio are members of the NPR network. I'm Paige Browning. See you later.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.